Thanks for tuning in to the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic, where we inspire, educate, and provide advice and insights around those who are in the sports business and entertainment industry. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And enjoy today's episode. Welcome to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Excited for our Clubhouse Industry Insight Series episode with our guest, Andre Luck, VP of Ticket Sales and Service at the Miami Marlins. We're going to get into what the ticket sales world will look like in 5 years, along with his journey, his experience in the sales side of things within professional sports. And nonetheless, Andre, welcome.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Jake.
Let's dive into how you got into the ticket sales space. An ASU grad, we are, as we were talking before we recorded, both from the Phoenix metro area. So it's always great to meet another, we'll call it Arizonian. Is that how we refer to ourselves these days?
I grew up there. I wasn't born there, so I don't think I've ever thought about it. But yeah, I guess Arizonan.
for you, you're a Sun Devil. But
that's all that matters.
Yeah, there you go. So as you think about how you got your start in the industry to where you got now, or where you got to now, did you ever think you would get to where you are?
No, and I guess I'll give kind of a background on how I got started and, you know, ended up where I am now. So growing up, you talked about Arizona State, like that was my love, my blood, maroon and gold. I always knew that's where I wanted to go to school. I moved to Arizona when I was 11. So in 1996, I was the year Arizona State made the Rose Bowl. I was like, all right, that's where I'm going to go to school. Never even thought about, you know, going out of state or going to that other school down south. I have some good friends down there, and as I've moved away, I've learned to appreciate all the schools in Arizona. But my last semester in college, I had studied business at Arizona State. I knew I wanted to work in business. I didn't really know what that meant. My parents were like, go to school, get your diploma, get a degree, and then you know, go on and work in business. And my last semester in college, I can remember it. I needed a part-time job, and I got an email from ASU. It said, want to work in sports? And I had a picture of Sun Devil Stadium in the background. I was like, wow, this seems really cool. I'm going to see what it is. And I went to this information session, really cool, like boardroom. It had the maroon ASU leather seats, like overlooking the football field. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And what the program was, it was called the Sales Academy. And there was a guy by the name of Mike Boswell, who worked full time for the athletic department. And he had a ticket sales staff of mostly students that were selling season tickets for football, basketball, baseball, all the sports. And I got hired to sell part-time nights. I'd make phone calls at night around my school schedule, and that was kind of my start. And I want to say back then I maybe made like $5 an hour and you made a little bit of commission, but I didn't care. It was like the coolest thing in the world. But I struggled to start out. Like, I was bad. I was the last person in my group to make a sale. I was getting really frustrated because I'd see everyone like high five the boss and you ring the bell when you make a sale. I'm like, I just want to make a sale, like to show that I can do this. And like from that day on, after I made my first sale, I was like, wow, this is so much fun. It never felt like work. I've been doing this a little over 17 years now. So from that opportunity, it led to an opportunity with the Arizona Diamondbacks. He knew some people that were building out a proactive sales team. This would have been in 2007. So I got hired in their very first inside sales class that year, spent 5 seasons with the D-backs. A brief stint back at Arizona State working under a company called the Aspire Group. I led a ticket sales team. I was there about 6 or 7 months with one of my mentors from the Diamondbacks that actually went to run the ticket sales team with the Houston Astros. His name's Jason Howard, and hired me to move out to Houston. So I lived there, worked for the Astros for 7 years, and then here with the Marlins. This is my fifth year, moved here January 2020. So long answer to your question, did I ever think I'd be here? No, definitely in Miami working for the Marlins is a a VP of ticket sales. And I remember when I first got the job, my mom, I always give her a hard time about this. She's like, I don't know that sales is like right for you. You don't have the personality, because she was thinking more like the sleazy car salesman. Like, she's like, that's not you. You're a nice person, you care about people, but that actually, does well long term as a salesperson, because you're thinking about the other person's best interest. You have that empathy. That's always played well for me in sales and as a leader. I was like, hey, remember when you said I wouldn't be good at this? She's like, I didn't say that. Like, I was just looking out for you. Like, but obviously she's really proud to see, where I've gone in my career, and I'm super excited. I've had a really some really amazing experiences throughout my career. Super blessed. Had some good leaders, met a ton of great people, and yeah, I wouldn't have drawn this up, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
You kind of over time have migrated from west to east. You made a stop in the middle, right? Now you're on the other coast, and I don't
So let me
know
jump in right there, because my wife's going to be listening to this, and that's a big part of why I'm here. So I can't miss that part, because that's probably the biggest part throughout my career and my personal life. So my wife's from South Florida. Her name's Brittany. She went to Florida State. She got a job with the Arizona Diamondbacks working in inside sales, like my last season there. So we met, started dating. After I got the job in Houston, we moved out to Houston together. We got married. We had our first two daughters there. She always wanted to be back in South Florida. So we always drew up. We're like, all right, if there's one team that you could work for, it'd be the Marlins, which was very random, because most people aren't thinking of all the teams in the league. Like, I want to go work for the Marlins, but there's only one baseball team in South Florida. It's close to, her family, which her entire family's there. She was like the only one that's not in Florida, in South Florida. So everything aligned, and we had our third daughter here as well. So life's great. We live about an hour and a half from where she grew up. So we're actually going to go up this weekend. One of her cousins has a birthday party. Like, so we always can, be back and forth. They can come down and help with the kids when we need help. And especially with me, with the amount of hours you work in sports, for having that support. Or when we were in Houston, my family was in Arizona at the time. Her family's in Florida. We're kind of in the middle, which is great both ways, but like, we didn't really have that family support. So it's good to have it here, down here in South Florida.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of not only life, but also as part of your career as it evolves, right? Taking different roles. And to your point, if you're in one location, where are you gonna work? What are you gonna do? And then how do you go about it, right? So I think that's the other interesting part. I'd love to pick your brain is, hey, you're gonna end up in a location or a market at one point. How did you go about getting that job? And kind of making it known to building a network in that area or getting to know people of, hey, I'm coming at some point, right? Like, who do I need to know? Who do I need to meet?
Yeah, I'm an open book, so I'm pretty transparent. I don't think a lot of people even here on my staff know this, but I actually had interviewed for a role with the Marlins in 2018 and didn't get the role. So a lot of times you can look at that as, failure. At the time for me, I was like, wow, I went into this interview and said, here's all the things that I want to do, I'm going to implement, I'm going to do. At the time it was a senior director role. And then when I didn't get the job, I was reflecting. I'm like, wow, like, I went and said I'm going to do all those things in this role, but I'm not even doing it in my current capacity. So, like, that was a wake up call for me. It's like, all right, if you're going to elevate and grow in the industry, whether it ends up in Florida or Atlanta, New York, whoever, like, there's a ton of competition. And that's not to scare people. It's just more like, now as you continue to rise up, like, there's just, you got to take it up another notch, another level. So I really honed in on, all right, there's things I need to grow in my leadership abilities. So I really locked in on that, just me growing as a person. But then also, like, me developing and growing for, as a leader and the strategy side of the business. And if I want a role like that, like, there's things I need to work on and improve upon, myself. So it was a really good wake up call. I took it, as almost a blessing of like, all right, now you've heard the feedback of where you can get better. Let's focus and work on that. And at the time it was a senior director role. So then a VP role comes open. I was like, wow, like, they didn't hire me for that. Like, there's no way they're gonna hire me for a VP role. But I had got a chance to network within the organization. I stayed close to a lot of the people that I met through the interview process. So that made the initial conversations easier. I already was very intimately, aware of some of the things they were going through, opportunities that were in front of them. And I was still just as excited, a year and a half, 2 years later as I was that one time. But, I would, that's something I would encourage people. Like it's not necessarily a failure if you don't get something you're going for. There's always lessons that you can learn from that. And it actually helped jumpstart me and put me in the right direction so that I could take an even greater capacity a few years later and just grow as a professional.
No, that's a great point. I had something similar in my career where I didn't get a role at the PGA Tour for one reason or another. The role folded internally. I was in the final two, and then they're like, "Yeah, we're actually not going to fill this." You're like, "Great, okay, we're and I went to Purdue, but then stayed in touch with all the people that I had interviewed with. And 9 months later, they called and they're like, "Hey, we've got this role. You should interview." Well, that wasn't even the role I ended up getting because I ended up interviewing with someone else for a different role that made more sense, right? As things were shifting and people were shifting. So it's always funny how it works out. But as you think about your role now and where you sit and what you've learned about ticket sales along the way, how things have changed immensely over the last 5, 10 years of everything from technology to the evolution of the season ticket slash member slash whatever you want to call it now these days to passes to you guys even at one point and you may still do this, but the bid system in terms of pricing for your season ticket and just when I saw that I was fascinated. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, I wonder how that's going to work out. Since it's been a year or two, I believe. So tell us a little bit about what you've learned along the way, but also just where you think the industry of ticket sales is going as it relates to what's called professional sports.
Yep. I mean, it's evolved a ton. I was joking with one of our team members yesterday. She had like a paper agreement form and like something needed to get signed. For whatever reason, we had to print it out. And like that was all we had back in the day. I was like, man, it's like the old times. Like I had this stack of papers. My team would fill out their agreements. I would plug that into a spreadsheet so I could track their sales and see where the sales were coming from. And like, that seems silly to even think I spent that many hours like manually inputting like sales into a spreadsheet to track our numbers. And like that wasn't that long ago. It was like maybe 7, 8 years ago. So, just from that standpoint and the collaboration with like your IT and technology team on, just having dashboards that can show you that information, that all the stuff I was running pivot tables and spreadsheets to try and look like within, snap of a finger, all that's right there for you. So I think the data that we collect and how we use that to make smart business decisions is probably the biggest, change. And not that we weren't thinking strategically, it's just all that wasn't readily available for us. Like, when I was first starting out in like the late 2000, 2010, that time frame, right? And I think you talked about it too, the evolution of from season tickets to now it's not just you get tickets for us in baseball, it's 81, or some teams have 83 games with exhibition. But it's a membership. It's a year-long membership, and there's other benefits that come with it. You feel like you're part of something bigger than just tickets to a ball game or an event, whatever it may be, to testing out new products. Like, how do you engage that that fan that maybe doesn't want to commit to a full season, but that's you still need to grow your fan base and bring in new accounts that as they evolve and develop fandom and affinity to your team, maybe they do eventually become members of yours or they get their business to do a group outing or they're part of an organization. So whether it's pass and that introduces them to their first game, we have a bunch of different ticket offers, whether it's like a Taco Tuesday or a Bark at the Park or a Burger and Beer Friday or a Beer Fest, like you're trying to engage maybe the casual fan who's like, yeah, I'm not really a huge baseball fan, but they're looking for social and fun things to do. And then, what you mentioned about name your price, they're still testing that out. That's still something new. Or like, is that something that people would prefer. And there's a lot of things that, teams have tried. Some stick, some don't. But I love how as an industry, we're continuing to evolve and take the data that we're finding, listening to the consumer. How do they want to buy? There's a difference between how we want to sell versus how the consumer wants to buy. And I see that a lot on the B2B side shifting. That's changed a long time, B2C with like Amazon and like, instant access to what you want and delivery for it. Something as simple like for us, we have a tool called Suite Pro. There's a company, Suite Experience Group. They partner with a bunch of different teams across different industries or across sports, and that allows you to sell your suites online. And in the past, and what most sales teams would prefer is someone wants a suite, they call into the suite line, their suite person gets it because they can get credit for it, they get commission for it. But if that person is ready to buy or you're not available, because I'll get updates like people are buying suites at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night because they just happen to be on our website. We aren't working at that time. So those are missed opportunities. So I think just from an e-commerce standpoint, people are more self-serving, which from a holistic business standpoint is great because you can be more efficient. You can reach more people where they want to buy. Now, the role of a salesperson, I think, evolves and changes where not necessarily it's more like just concierge service. There still needs to be a proactive effort, proactive motion, but more collaboration with your marketing team on, all right, how are we targeting a certain market that may self-serve? And then what's that opportunity for our sales team to do proactive measures that for sales that wouldn't have come in already? I think a big part of that, at least where I put my team's focus, is on proactive outbound B2B efforts and B2B outreach. Because that's still, I think there's the relational aspect that needs to be there where that's not always going to be a transactional buy, like maybe someone looking to buy tickets for their friends and family to come out to a game. So I see, that changing. And then, I mean, the obvious one is just the introduction of, new technologies like AI, ChatGPT, things like that. There's a lot of teams who are using more like virtual bots to communicate, whether it's over email or text, to do some of that maybe more administrative work or, some of those early stages to find hand raisers in the process, which now that allows your sales team to only communicate with warm, interested people, warm, interested leads. And I think that's where, not just us, across all industries and sales heading towards, you have your sales team make all these outbound calls. Close rate of those is maybe 1 to 2% if you're good. Is there a more efficient way to do it? And I think a lot of people are starting to rethink, here's how we were trained and came up. Probably the best solution at the time because there was no other technology to do it. But now that we have it, how do we more efficiently, build our staffs? What do we have them focusing on that wouldn't have come in? What's that incremental value that they bring to the team? So, I mean, it's something I think about every day. I'm going to say it keeps me up at night. I actually get up early to like think about stuff like that instead. Because it excites me. And I think there's huge opportunity across the sports industry. And I'm just excited. A lot of us have come up and are starting to look at things a little different and use technology to improve our processes from, the great foundation a lot of the leaders that we learned from laid for us. But there's, new technologies that can take us to the next level.
Yeah, we'll get into the staffing piece in a minute, but I do want to go back to the name your price season ticket experiment, right? Because it's always fun to talk to somebody who's doing something new for the first time and they're the first one. As you think about what you've learned from it and even just how it's worked in general and reaction from consumers, right? To something different, to something new, what's been the couple key learnings?
So it's just name your price for the game, is what we started with last year. And so now how that's evolved, we saw, it was a small test case, so small sample size. What we're looking at, how we've pivoted this year, it's name your price for a seat upgrade. So you already have a ticket to the game and you want to move into, a new location. So you have the opportunity to pitch the price that you're willing to pay. The lessons we'll get from that is like, all right, what's really the value of this ticket? How much is someone willing to pay for that? We have obviously our own data, but it's just another data point for us. Or how does someone perceive the value of the seat? So that's where we pivoted to start the season here for 2024. Too early to say, hey, here's how it's working or not working. But we're watching that closely. And, we've seen some people take advantage of it already and start to use that for seat upgrades. So it was twofold. It was, how do we understand what the true value or rate that someone's willing to pay for a ticket? But then also have an option and a tool where someone can upgrade their seats. There's not many vendors in the space. so that you get incremental revenue as an organization.
Well, and the incremental revenue during that game, during that time, it's perishable, right? Like, it's going to go away. Yeah. If someone's not sitting there, then why not that person that's going to pay more money out while they're there, right? So I mentioned the staffing piece and just kind of how you think about it holistically as clubs go about building their sales and service staff, right? And the proportionality, you worked with Mike Deloso. We had Mike on at one point talking about kind of how they try and build, a ticket sales culture. And part of that is a separation of sales and service. Every organization might go about it a little bit differently, but where do you see the sales side going? Where do you see the service side going? And then is there this crossover of premium, and ticket sales kind of all being in one at some point based on shared spaces and things of that nature?
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a lot of stuff there. First off, Mike's amazing. We sat next to each other as salespeople. I learned a ton from him when I worked for the Diamondbacks, and he was always a little more forward thinking. So like he always, kind of pushed the envelope for me and made me think a little different how I did things. But, I think we align definitely at the foundational level on like that culture, whether that's how we came up with the Diamondbacks and leaders that we work for, or the Arizona Diamondbacks. I know the correct pronunciation of it, or the D-backs. That was like pivotal for me because, all I thought was like, all right, sales is you come in, you have your people you work with and you sell. But what I've seen, where I've seen success, and I'm sure they have as well over the years, is like when you have that culture of people who come up through your system of, most call it inside sales, but some form of an entry level kind of training ground for people to establish that foundation and then, take the next step and grow into an account executive, a more senior role, and then eventually into management. It's similar to, like minor league baseball, and like, you develop your farm system, and then those people, have that same culture and that same process when they get to the big leagues. I believe a ton in that. So I don't think that'll ever change. I think most people want to have that instead of having, always go find people externally. I think it's good to bring in, people from other companies and other organizations, because it just gives you a different way of thinking. But for the most part, we want to grow internally. coming out of the pandemic, I saw a big shift where, at one point a lot of inside sales teams got cut because there wasn't just so much to sell. So those are starting to start back up. So that's, I still think, going to be huge for teams, just kind of get people into their ticketing system or ticketing flow or process in their departments. I do still think there's a differentiation between sales and service. I do like the idea of, having a dedicated service team that, can handle a lot of the stuff that goes with it. But again, going back to technology, some of that, service stuff, a lot of people can self-serve now, which now puts your service team in a spot where they can go focus on proactive sales efforts, account expansion, growth, upgrades, the cross-selling opportunities, instead of, switching out tickets and exchanging tickets and like customer service type things. So I believe, a really good service executive or service team has a very strong sales background. So they're going to need to know how to sell. It's not just like your customer service, like you need to upsell, like that's your biggest book of business for your ticket sales team. And then I do like, the idea of a proactive outbound sales unit that's going out and finding new business. I think if you have too many accounts, you spend a lot of your time with that, and there's a bunch of opportunities still and growth within your accounts, but who's out there that's going to get brand new incremental business? I'll speak to what we've done here in Miami, how we built the sales team as it relates to kind of that premium tier. I don't necessarily have a premium team. What we've done is pivot to more business development team. So who would have been our more senior kind of premium reps, they're primarily 99% focused on outbound B2B efforts. A lot of that will lead to premium suites, but it could be corporate group outings. It could be just traditional season ticket memberships. But a part of their focus too, or at least where they have the ability, is when they're talking to a business, they can talk about corporate partnership opportunities. And so if someone's looking for more marketing assets versus just tickets, they're well-versed in that. So like we're not losing revenue opportunities in an organization. So, you know, they'd probably be what you'd consider in most sports teams your premium team. I just looked at it as like, we need people who are dedicated solely to going outbound B2B. Because even when, you know, I was in Houston, we, you know, made it, won the World Series, made the playoffs a bunch of years, and they continue to, you know, keep going on. I wasn't seeing a lot of businesses calling in. Like, there were some, you know, they had a relationship, they want to do an outing, but it was mostly fans. And it was like, there's such an opportunity in sports, one, to market to businesses, but two, how you sell to businesses. And if you can come in for more, you know, an ROI conversation or, you know, meeting their business objectives versus, hey, we have tickets, you have a business. Like, if you can intelligently have that conversation like a business person, there's a ton of opportunity there. So that's where we really focus that group. And then everyone, I think, across the staff, and you're going to see, you should see this in most teams. Everyone's full menu. Everyone should be well-versed in all the products. You shouldn't have to pass it over to someone else. Maybe you're not as knowledgeable. Maybe you don't do it as much, but everyone should know the entire business. But, you know, I think across, you know, all sales units, you're really getting scrutinized on like, what's the, and I think it's smart, what's the incremental value each person's bringing in? You know, are you overstaffed? Like, do you have enough people based on the demand that's coming in? Going back to my example earlier of your outbound efforts, like, is that the most efficient way to do it? Do teams run leaner? Do you need to go bigger? Are you not capitalizing the market share? I think it's going to be different for every team. But I think what would be smart is, you know, working with your marketing team, working with your analytics team, working with your, you know, finance, your CFO, and like, all as a collective kind of integrated, you know, go-to-market team of like, what's the best way for us to maximize our revenue? Do we have enough salespeople? Do we not? Should some of this stuff be more, you know, through the marketing lens? Because a lot of what we do is maybe more marketing type efforts. And like, what's the best way for us to maximize revenue? Not us working in our individual silos of, you know, ticket sales is doing this, marketing's doing this, and then, you know, whoever's doing what. But like, are we just stepping on each other's toes, talking to the same people about different things? I think you just need to communicate more across. And that's something that, you know, I'm really advocating for here and across the industry. So I don't know that we've done a great job of that. I think we've really like, this is how it's always been done, and let's keep running that same play. And I think we're being forced to look at it from a different lens because, you know, what's the best way to maximize profit for each team?
Yeah, a lot of silos can exist and easily, right? And then you look up and you've missed out on opportunities, to your point. Is there a ROI you look for in terms of a salesperson, you know, salary to revenue that they're bringing in? I know it's not that black and white, right? Like, someone can be positive or negative on the culture, you know, that sort of thing. But just from a, hey, here's our revenue goal. If we have this many people and this many people have a 10x return, whatever the case might be, again, not that black and white, but is there a way in which you systematically may go about, okay, we might get to this many people because of X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, I think it's a bigger conversation of like, you know, what as an organization do we feel comfortable with when you look at, you know, your expenses and all of your expenses, not just what you spend on like marketing dollars, but like, you know, the salary, the headcount, your sales team, like all that should go into how you look at the profitability of your business. And like, what are you comfortable with? I mean, just simple, like if you're paying a salesperson X amount and they're bringing in less than that, like that's already a negative ROI. But when you factor in all the costs and what they're bringing in revenue, one thing I like to look at too is like, not just like, what does their revenue number say, but like, what are they bringing like incremental? Some of that stuff may be sales that, you know, if we had less people, we would still capture those sales. Those are people coming to us. Or if it's a bottom performer, someone else might have been able to capture more revenue from that person because they'll do a better job through the sales process. So I think, yeah, it's a holistic decision at the top of like, you know, all right, here's how much we want to invest in our sales unit. And here's how much we respect and how much we expect from a revenue side. And does the ROI meet what we're looking to do? Are we profitable the way we want to be? And then individually, each person, culture is a big part of that because you can have someone who's crushing it. But if they're bringing down others, you can't really quantify that number. But from a culture standpoint, morale standpoint, you know that has to have a negative impact on it.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. And every place is different, right? Depending on the culture and even just the market too, right? And what's around you and what's available. And, you know, some organizations might have partnerships with the local university and have, you know, similar to kind of how you started with the sales academy and different things of that nature. So it just depends. And it'll be really interesting to see how it evolves. But really appreciate all your insights and perspectives. You ready for rapid fire?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't ready for this. So let's go.
All right. If you're walking into a ballpark, what's the first food item you're grabbing?
Everywhere I've gone, I always get pizza. Like, I always got Peter Piper pizza when they had it, the D-backs. There's, you know, a pizza at the Astros. I don't like hot dogs. So I usually don't do the hot dogs, popcorn, peanuts, that. I'll usually probably grab a pizza.
All right. Is there a baseball stadium you haven't been to that you want to go to?
I hear Pittsburgh's beautiful.
See, it's very cool.
Yeah, I haven't been to that ballpark yet, so that's probably the next one I want to check out.
Is there another? So you've worked in baseball for most of your career. Is there another sport that you like to learn from other people? Hey, they do X, Y, and Z, but there's another sport that's similar that you like to learn from people about.
I think a lot of us have kind of, you know, learn from the NBA model, you could say. You know, their business operations, Teambo, they do a really good job from marketing, sales standpoint. So always pay close attention there. And the NBA, they're very innovative. But also the NFL, man, they're a monster right now. Like, there's just tons of money that's pumping into it. So, you know, I have some friends that work at different NFL teams, and like picking their brain from, you know, a different perspective, it's a different fan base, it's a different type of consumer. You know, how are they going to market with their sales efforts? And like, are there things we could take away from that and apply here to baseball?
All right. If sports didn't exist, just didn't exist at all, what would you do? Not a sleazy car salesman. I know
yeah,
that.
That's definitely not it. Mommy wouldn't let me do that. I actually got asked this question recently. I would be a R&B/hip-hop music producer.
Oh, interesting. I have not heard that one before. That's great. I love it.
I always like, me and my buddies, we made a, you could call it a mixtape, a rap mixtape back in the day. But I always enjoyed more like the back end of it, of like, you know, putting the beats together, like doing the music. So I think I'd enjoy that. I don't have to be out in front being the rapper on the album, on the tracks. So.
Yeah, the behind the scenes. Love it. Yep. Andre, really appreciate all the insights, perspectives. Welcome on anytime. Best of luck in this season and the ones going forward. Appreciate it, and chat soon.
Of course. Yeah. And congrats on the amazing season you guys had too. I was watching really closely and was hoping y'all would pull it out, but I still pay close attention as we talked about before. Phoenix is home, so always pull for the D-backs.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Remember to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Subscribe and follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And stay tuned for next Monday's episode with a new guest and new content.